In this episode, we discuss G.I. Joe Retaliation, in which the Joes and Cobra enact brutal retaliation against the audience. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Beep boop, I'm Stuart Wellington, and robot.
And I'm Elliot Kalin, super happy and proud of how Stuart's robot impression has come along. Stuart, you've graduated from Robot Impression College.
Stuart almost...
You've graduated from the Rich Little Bot School of Robot Impressions.
Stuart almost sprayed out one of the two Coors Lights he has in front of him currently.
It almost came out of my exhaust port.
Backup Coors Light. Yeah, he's like a fucking bender. He runs on alcohol. Yeah.
Right in my disk drive.
That's his fun fuel.
Mm-hmm. So welcome to the Flophouse.
Welcome to the Flophouse.
Just a message, don't pour beer into the disk drive of your computer.
No.
Welcome to the Flophouse. What is this Flophouse thing that we're doing, Dan?
It's a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we chat about it.
If you're new to the show, turn it off and go back to an earlier episode that makes more sense.
And if you're new to the show, we don't know. Keep listening.
Yeah, man. There's no way we can know.
Yeah,
and that's your secret thrill, knowing that you're nude.
And we have no idea.
Yeah, come on.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case, we watched a little movie called G.I. Joe: Retaliation.
Which is not a little movie. It was a very big movie.
Huge.
And, some would say
big-ish.
Too big.
Very successful. Financially,
it was financially successful. Okay. I mean,
it wasn't like a huge success, like Overnight Sensation.
Now, this
it made a lot of money.
Is a sequel to G.I. Joe: The Rise of Cobra, which I'll let you in on a little secret, guys. It's a movie I kind of like. Don't get me wrong; it's deeply stupid, not very good, but it has that.
Let me guess, Steven, you watched it on a plane.
It's got that Steven Sommers charm, that Mummy. Deep Rising charm, where it's embraces its own idiocy.
And Van Helsing.
I wish it had more of a Mark Summers charm, where the Joes are like have to find a red flag inside of a big nose full of gross green slime.
I wish it had more
OCD,
of a,
so they don't really like to.
Well, that part of the Mark Summers charm I like to leave out.
Okay.
Or like a summer school charm, where there's a bunch of montages. Mm-hmm. Dean Cameron's in it.
Yeah,
Mark Harmon is wooing Kirstie Alley. She was in it, right?
Probably.
Love interest? I can't even remember.
I don't.
She wasn't one of the students, though.
There
was
that blonde girl who was in all those 80 sitcoms.
Christina Applegate.
No. Well, this has not been a fruitful avenue, so let's change it.
I said apple. And Christina Applegate. What more fruits do you need?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so G.I. Joe Retaliation. So you liked the first movie because it's stupid.
Yeah, I mean, it's a flavor of dumb that's enjoyable.
I have to admit, I found the first movie very boring.
Okay. This movie.
I didn't remember very much of it, but luckily Elliot remembered a bunch about nanomachines and Cobra Commanders.
The first movie is all about nanobots that eat the Eiffel Tower, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt turns out to be Cobra Commander at the end and gets his face all screwed up. And
his face
the movie
is taken
ends.
Off.
The movie ends with Cobra Commander and Destro escaping, and then they're caught about 3 minutes later. So the rise of Cobra is represented by them almost immediately being caught and thrown in prison.
This movie, as Elliot's plot summary will show, probably should have been called The Rise of Cobra because they totally rise up in this one.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean,
like their titular namesake, they rise up from the ground and spread their hood.
And then they bite and then a mongoose
they
kills
them. They spray
him.
Poison everywhere.
Until a charmer with a flute plays a beautiful melody. Which causes them to dance.
They are entranced.
And then retreat back into their wicker basket to entertain another crowd of tourists.
This movie is a direct sequel in one sense, which is that at the end of the first movie, the president, Jonathan Pryce, is being impersonated by
kidnapped and impersonated.
Shape-shifting Cobra.
Well, he's a master of disguise.
Yeah.
And he uses his nanobots to shapeshift.
But this is also...
And his name is Zartan.
Yeah, but this is also not a direct sequel and almost a complete reboot in the other sense, which is that Channing Tatum is the only Joe to bridge both movies, and he gets killed.
What are you talking about? What about Snake Eyes?
Oh, yeah. Well, Snake Eyes is behind Ray a Park. Mask the whole time. You don't really think about him as being...
Well, I don't know. He's kind of everyone's favorite character.
Yeah, he's a ninja in a black
Storm
outfit,
Shadow
and he doesn't talk.
Movies.
And right. He has a pet wolf named Timber.
Okay. I mean, that seems like an unimaginative name for
it's
a pet wolf.
On the nose. You're one step away from just naming your wolf Wolfie.
Hey, Fuzz. Fuzzes, come over here. Hey. Furball.
Yep. Hey, feral dog.
Come on. This is my bulldog. His name's Bull.
Come here, Claws.
Santa Claus. Yep. The patron saint of wolves.
All the little wolf cubs put their stockings up and say, wait, why do we wear stockings? We're wolves.
Yeah.
Guys, I don't know about you, but I love Jonathan Pryce.
Me too.
But there is no way a guy with that crazy a haircut would be elected president of the United States.
It's not that crazy.
It's all over the place.
It's messy. You know who also had a messy haircut?
Zartan.
A little man named Jesus Christ.
Nope. Abraham Lincoln is what I was going to say, who was elected president. Twice. Yeah. Anyway, Jonathan Pryce, yeah, he, for me, was the saving grace of this movie because he really seems to enjoy playing Zartan, who is pretending to be the president but still says goofy one-liners and calls people like dude and stuff like that.
Well, why wouldn't you enjoy, like, if you're playing a character named Zartan, you know that you're in for a good time.
I mean, maybe if you think it's an anagram of Tarzan, I don't know why Zartan could easily be a... If this was a Star Wars movie and a character walked out and said, I am Zartan, you'd be like, all right, I'm ready for this to be a shitty character.
But
what race
you
is
could,
this
yeah,
stereotype
you could be,
of?
You could be anything.
Yeah.
But if you're a classy English actor slumming it in an American movie and you're like told that your character's name is Zartan, you're like, great, I know exactly what I'm doing.
No, again, there's nothing about the name Zartan. Zartan would make us him. Jonathan Pryce like, all right, I'm playing some sort of intergalactic warlord named Zartan.
I'm not saying it explains.
Or maybe he's a caveman of some kind.
I'm not saying it explains what kind of character.
No, he's a timeless shapeshifter.
But you know the tone that you need
to take. Yeah, you know it's... Well, the minute you know you sign up for a movie called G.I. Joe Retaliation, you know the tone of the movie. It's not going to be a chamber drama. It's not going to be like the time I saw Jonathan Pryce on stage in The Caretaker, a Pinter play.
Oh, man.
Which he was fantastic in. Mm. Let me tell you, as good as he was as Zartan... As hard as it is to believe, he was even better in this Harold Pinter play.
You're saying it was worth the price of admission.
Price of what?
Oh, it's a pun. I get it.
That was the Kalen Culture Corner.
Yeah, Kalen.
Well, it's one of the
KKK.
Many times on this.
You should really rebrand that.
Nope, I like it. I'm trying to reclaim the initials. It's one of the many times on this podcast that I've mentioned seeing an actor in a stage play.
Yeah.
It's a good production, too. Brooklyn Academy Music.
But we've given you no idea of what this movie's
about
so far.
So, G.I. Joe, Retaliation. Who's retaliating? Who are the Joes? Perhaps we've forgotten. Let's explain. The G.I. Joe unit is...
G.I. Joe stands for Giraffe Intelligence Joe.
Yep. It's Joe Camel's unit where he tries to figure out how smart giraffes are to see if they'd be better mascots for selling cigarettes to kids.
Yep.
Because giraffes are already the Toys R Us mascot. If they could push cigarettes in Toys R Us... They have a lock on the market. And so Joe Camel puts together a unit of the best giraffe psychologists and the best tobacco marketing execs to find out how smart giraffes are.
Are they like a wacky Motley Crue, like the Weasels and Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Even better. They're Motley Crue. Tommy Lee, Nikki Six, the whole gang.
Name the other two.
They're, I don't know.
And the rest.
And friends. Motley Crue, or as I know it, Tommy Lee, Nikki Six, and pals. They're the head, and boy, are they causing too much rock and rolling and too much partying when Joe Camel has some work to do. And so they have no choice but to kidnap the Queen of England.
Okay.
To ransom her for the secret files held by the British government about giraffe intelligence by MI6, the Mammal Intelligence Six Pack. Which is
six different mammals, or
yes, exactly. A beaver, a badger, a bear,
a manatee,
a boar.
You need an aquatic one.
A manatee and a dugong. There's two aquatic mammals.
A manatee. But they're so similar.
And that's the problem.
That's part of the joke.
Everyone keeps mixing them up and can't tell them apart, to the exasperation of the sea cow, the manatee, who thinks he should be easier to recognize since manatees are so much more famous than dugongs. Anyway, it all comes to a head at a big breakdancing competition in, where else, the center of the earth.
Okay. Which is not part of Germany, apparently.
No, no. So let's start at G.I. Joe Retaliation, which is not as fun as the movie that I just outlined for you.
Not at all.
So G.I. Joe is a special branch of the military. In the last movie, they seem to be some kind of international ops network.
Yeah.
But here, they're just part of the American military that operates independently of everybody else and is both a secret covert strike squad and also world famous. Everybody knows their names, faces, their code names.
And also, I find it very delightful at one point when Jonathan Pryce, as he's a bad guy playing the president, but at this point we don't know that. We just think he's the president.
Yeah, it's a richly layered performance.
But he goes, "Get me the G.I. Joes." And I'm like, I don't think you need to say that as president. You're the commander in chief. You're just like, they're a division of the army. You can just be like, so the G.I. Joes, this is my orders for them. Not
their
like,
place in the chain of command is never quite
place
made
a phone
clear.
Call. They're probably in the fucking Bahamas on vacation.
Well, anyway, the point is,
why are you looking at me? Was that because I just got back from the Bahamas?
Yeah, like this jag off.
He was trying to connect to you.
Sure. Do a little bit of crowd work.
He's like, let me do some of my Stewart material. So, anybody here work at a German-themed bar?
I do.
Stewarts are always wearing those Frankenstein's monster-looking shoes, am I right?
That is hilarious. Roasted.
So what's with being married to Stewart's wife, am I right? And Stewart's like, I totally get that. Anyway, the movie. Let me get 1 minute into the movie. So,
I don't think so.
The president of Pakistan has been assassinated, and in the ensuing chaos, the Pakistani nuclear warheads are up for grabs.
Yep.
So the president, breaking all rules of sovereignty, which, who cares? We already broke Pakistan's sovereignty when we killed Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
Sends the Joes
that
in.
That at least is accurate.
The president sends the Joes in to secure these nuclear weapons, but it's really part of a trick. They're actually framing the Joes for the murder of the Pakistani president, prime minister? President, I think. No, prime minister. For the murder of the head of state of Pakistan and stealing of the nuclear weapons. So the president, Jonathan Pryce, who's actually Zartan in disguise, mm-hmm. the real president is kept in a bunker under
the White House.
I don't know if it's the White House or if it's just some old house somewhere.
I think it's like the White House basement.
I think it's the White House basement too.
You got to beneath the White House basement, and Zartan just goes
keep
down
your
there
enemies close. And your enemy's closer.
Doesn't make any sense. But Zartan just goes down there every now and then to punch the president in the face and torture him.
And to intimate that he's sleeping with his wife.
Yeah. But so the president, Zartan in disguise, sends a unit of the military, says the Joes have gone rogue, sends some helicopter gunships over, blows up all the Joes, kills Channing Tatum, who we've already seen as a great guy palling around with his buddy, Dwayne the Rock
Terrible
Johnson.
Terrible at video games.
And
terrible
by the way,
video game. We've learned that he's an excellent combat guy, terrible at video games, and now he's been killed.
And other than Jonathan Pryce, he's the only returning actor other than him
right.
and Ray Park.
And Ray Park.
And
Ray who?
Ray Park, who playing Snake Eyes.
Toad?
And isn't this the same guy who's playing Storm Shadow, right?
Oh, yeah. Him too.
But, like, Channing Tatum, a perfectly charming actor, very good in Magic Mike and in the 21 Jump Street. Here, like
Step Up, right?
Yeah, but They've delayed this movie in part because Channing Tatum became a much bigger star in between when they first shot it and when they released it. And so, like, there's a lot of scenes at the beginning with Channing Tatum that don't necessarily have a lot of bearing on
They're
where the movie
filler.
Goes.
They're Channing Tatum filler.
Later, yeah. And it's like, well, it's weird because you're like, okay, on the one hand, he's one of the more charming actors that are in this movie, like, he actually has some charisma, unlike the guy who plays Flint, who makes no impression.
Yeah, it goes Jonathan Pryce, Adrian Padalecki.
Yeah.
Playing the part of Lady Jane.
Got, the Rock, maybe, and then Channing Tatum.
And then way down at the bottom below, the guns and the vehicles used in the movie.
And
a sleeping Bruce Willis.
There is the charisma of Flint, who is a kid. Okay, so let's say who the characters are.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say that the Joes are framed for everything. All of them are killed except our three heroes.
Yep.
Dwayne the Rock Johnson as Roadblock.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Palicki as Lady Jane. And whoever plays Flint as Flint. And Flint is a guy who is there to be the third guy in scenes where
a guy to drive the car for the Joes.
Exactly. So that Roadblock and Lady Jane can have a conversation. They need Flint to drive the car. Sorry, Lady Jane. Not Lady Joan, who I guess would be
Jay.
Joan of Arc.
It's not Jane.
I thought it was Jane.
No. Lady
Lady J.
J-A-Y-E.
I apologize.
I just say that because
you know what? Let me write up an apology to Adrian Pulley.
Out there,
to Larry Hama.
I just know that in our audience,
I would love to talk to Larry Hama. Yeah,
in our audience, there exist G.I. Joe nerds who are very upset.
What?
I have to say this. I'm a nerd about a lot of stupid things, yeah, and a lot of childish things. But a G.I. Joe nerd is a nerd I cannot respect. Let me just say that.
So this is like a Cobra Commander shaped gauntlet being thrown down.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, if you were a Cobra Commander fan, maybe.
No, I understand.
This comes from a guy who has his Facebook picture is wearing a Cobra Commander outfit.
Well, Cobra Commander's great, but that's also, I'm not wearing it because I love G.I. Joe so much. I'm wearing it because it's goofy.
You were wearing it because you're the enemy of G.I. Joe.
Well, that too. But I was wearing it because it's fun to walk around your office dressed like Cobra Commander.
No, but you were saying this before, like as we were watching the movie, and it's trenchant, and I agree that the only people watching this movie are people who have misplaced nostalgia for the shitty cartoons.
I mean,
of their
it's
youth.
Fine to have nostalgia for it, but then then say like, I need a grown up version of this, yeah, to justify my liking of this thing, you know?
Right? To inflate it into something that is then deserving of or needing of a hundreds of millions of dollar like big budget Hollywood film,
or
rather
alternately,
than
like I like this thing, but I'm ashamed to like its original form because it's a children's cartoon,
right?
So for me to be able to justify as an adult that I like this thing, I need like a grown-up version of it. I feel the same way about like the Transformers or the Ninja Turtles.
Exactly.
If they ever make a Thundercats movie, which they threaten every now and then, like there's it's for I feel
just
like
just have your nostalgia for that thing.
But then how is that different from one. from Spider-Man stuff?
I would argue that Spider-Man has a depth of character and theme that G.I. Joe or Transformers and things don't have. And that's purely...
It could partially be based on one was originally created to tell stories and one was created
to sell toys. But also the artistry that's been put into the character. But I'm sure...
And one of them has a spider ham.
If there were ham formers. If there were ham formers or G.I. pigs, then you are. Or I guess with P.I.G. Joes. But it's like one of them a sense of a greater attempt at art, creative artistry has been placed into.
Yeah.
Whereas...
That's what separates comic book movies from the toy.
No, just individual
movies.
Characters. Like Ninja Turtles is made in a lot of ways as a cartoon to sell toys.
Okay, that's
but
fair.
They put a little more effort into it than some of the other ones. But anyway, we don't need to get into that because I've alienated so many of our listeners who love their Transformers movies and their G.I. Joes.
Burning tiny little effigies of Elliot Kalin.
As I burn bridges to the nerd community. Well, I guess it's academia for me now. I can only be around literary nerds. Ew, gross. So anyway, the Joes are
Let's
three
talk
Joe
about
heroes.
The mill on the floss.
No, ew, on. I don't want to floss. with a mill. What am I, a giant? Anyway, so the Joes are on the run. They've been framed. And the president, Zartan, goes on television to announce that the Joes are criminals. And it's one of these things where it's like, wait, so does everyone in the world know who the Joes are? Like he mentions,
yeah, the world knows them as Joes.
He mentions
by
Snake
their,
Eyes.
Like, weird code
like,
names.
So is Snake Eyes famous?
Yeah, Snake Eyes was Time's Man of the Year last year.
He's supposed to be like a covert ninja. It seems like it would get in the way if people recognized him and knew who he was. But anyway, at the same
everybody time... Everybody knows who everybody is, except when they don't want people to know who they are.
At the same time, Snake Eyes, who has just been announced on TV as a terrorist, is arrested, we think, and taken to a prison overseen by Walt Goggins.
Yeah. You may know as Boyd Crowder from Justified. He was on
actually,
The Shield.
He turns in my second favorite performance
right.
in the movie after Jonathan
sure.
Pryce. He's super charismatic as the warden of this underground
yeah,
supervillain prison.
Goggins.
Who delights in delivering exposition.
He gets so much fun out of explaining to what the man he thinks is Snake Eyes how his underground prison works, where people are put into tanks of a liquid that
welcome,
keeps them
Elliot.
Awake but paralyzes their muscles.
Yeah.
What?
I said you're welcome after you said tanks.
Oh, I got it.
Oh, wow. Really? Why does it feel like someone just punched me really hard in the gut? Ouch. So anyway.
That's your funny bone breaking.
Look, Dan, if the funny bone bends, it's funny. If it breaks, I need a doctor. Yeah. So this underground prison... that is super cooled because they're at the center of the Earth almost.
It is super
cooled. They're
cool.
So far underground that Boyd Crowder mentions that they are, Warden Crowder, mentions they're so far underground that they're no longer in German territory, but in international territory. And I didn't realize...
So it's totally legal to put dudes in giant fucking freezing Bacta tanks.
I didn't realize that there was a depth you could go where you were no longer bound by law.
Man, you can waterboard the shit out of people as long as you're at the center of the Earth.
As long as you're in Mole Man country. But
welcome to Mole Man country.
That's for Marlboro cigarettes.
Yep.
So they're in these. So this huge prison has been set up to hold three prisoners: Cobra Commander, Destro, and Tube for prisoner TBD.
And that's it. That's totally it. They have no more space for tanks.
And the whole time the warden is like so happy that Snake Eyes is there. They finally caught Snake Eyes, and they
Can you give me my signature, Snake Eyes?
And did I mention that the entire time Snake Eyes is in his signature armor and helmet?
Yeah.
So they let him keep on his superhero costume as they brought him to jail.
And they brought his fucking katanas with him, too.
Yeah.
Like, you would think those would go into evidence.
For some reason, his whole armory is with him, and it's not till they're prepping him to put him in the tank that they take his helmet off and realize it's Storm Shadow.
They're like, oh, well, I mean, as an afterthought, maybe we should just remove this helmet. What the?
That's a different guy than the prisoner we thought we had. Well, put him in the tube.
Put him in the tank.
The same way that, like, let's say Dan robbed a bank wearing a gorilla mask, and I was at a Halloween party with a gorilla mask on, and the police arrested me. I went to trial. They were walking me to prison. Maybe Dan killed someone, so I'm on death row. I'm about to be brought to the electric chair, and they're like, you know what? Before we give you the chair, let's take this mask off. They see it's me, and they go, you're not the guy that was supposedly the murderer.
Strap him in, boys.
We got the chair. Strap him in and kill him.
I got the work order. It says one guy in gorilla mask.
The work order just says man in gorilla mask, and that's what you had on.
It's not my job to sort gorillas.
Get a gorilla sorter for that, but we can't. All the best gorilla sorters were hired by Joe Camel as part of his gorilla intelligence Joe operation. But anyway.
That's a good union to get in, by the way.
Oh, the gorilla sorters? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great pay, great benefits.
Did you just say grape benefits?
Yeah, grape ape.
Yeah, grape ape benefits. If you don't pay overtime, then Grape Ape comes in and attacks you.
He's so benevolent.
A benefit.
It's a benefit to the union.
I guess that's
so true. So they throw Storm Shadow in this tube, and they fill him up with this liquid that paralyzes you, but I guess since he's a super ninja, it doesn't affect him, and he fights his way out, and he's got tons of shurikens that he's just throwing all over the place.
All over him, dude.
While he's fighting...
Yeah, when you're that good of a ninja, you can turn anything into a shuriken.
They did not pat him down before they put him in the tube.
He's just came in with all his
weapons. Don't pat down a ninja. There's going to be like
little
sleep
darts. You think he's got throwing stars on him? So no, just put him in.
He's got throwing stars hidden in his rectum, I guess, that he just takes out and throws
covered in
at
blowfish
them.
Toxin.
Yeah. Which you really don't want to store in your rectum. That is going to get into your blood.
Well, when you're a great ninja, you can do whatever you want.
Apparently. While he's fighting out from the inside to free Cobra Commander, Firefly, a former Joe, who's now a bad
guy.
Played by Ray Stevenson.
Punisher Warzone.
He's fighting in from the outside, and he does this with his tiny little robot fireflies that explode, and also with his motorcycle that he rides up, then jumps off of. It splits into pieces and then explodes against the door to open up an entrance. Yeah.
So he's got no ride home.
But it was super cool the way he lost his ride home.
And there's no one alive to watch him do it. That's the thing.
They look at Destro and his tube.
Security cameras.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
And they go, Destro, you're out of the band. And then they leave and then blow the place up. So I guess Destro is dead now.
Yeah, probably.
But
the best thing is that Walton Goggins' character was explaining like all the weaknesses of this place, and Elliot's like, great, he's explaining the weaknesses so that this guy can break out. And then Walton Goggins is the one who utilizes those weaknesses to blow everybody up.
Yeah, and he manages to...
It's a twist.
...to heavily burn the back of Storm Shadow as he does so. Cobra Commander gets out, and here's where the movie... Okay, the movie was kind of bland and boring up to this point. Great performance by... Walton Goggins.
Mm-hmm.
Fun performance by Jonathan Pryce.
R.I.P.
But rest in peace, the warden. Mm-hmm. But here's where this is going to go back on what I said before about people wanting adult versions of their cartoon characters. And I realized when like the new Michael Bay Ninja Turtles trailer came out and I didn't give a shit, I was like, oh, I guess I don't really care when they change stuff about stuff I liked as a kid, because the version I liked as a kid is still there. But Cobra Commander starts speaking, and he has a super deep voice. And for some reason, at the core of my being, this really bothered me.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm a hypocrite, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, he should be one, like, two notches down from Crypt Keeper.
He should have, yeah, he should have a really high pitched, scratchy voice because he's supposed to sound like a snake.
Yeah,
snakes wouldn't have low pitched voices.
Yeah, no way.
And also,
yes, when snakes speak, they're always super squeaky.
And they go like this. Yes. They always, the S's are drawn out. Like that drug dealing snake man from that anti-drug commercial. You remember the one?
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
that PSA from the late 80s. Anyway, the point is, I don't know whose great idea.
I'm trying to remember the Jungle Book.
Yeah, well, he has a kind of a high-pitched voice, right?
Yeah.
What's his name? Ka?
Ka.
The point is, Cobra Commander is the one G.I. Joe character who's really fun. And why would you defund him by taking away his high-pitched, silly voice? And not once in the movie have him go, retreat! Which was his thing. Because it turns out Cobra Commander is really bad at what he does.
Yeah, well, he's very good at keeping his people alive by retreating.
But no, he's not.
And by having them eject from planes.
His retreat always is him in an escape pod with the Baroness, and the rest of his men are killed by lasers.
Yeah, Major Blood might get away in a Hiss tank, but that's about it.
And like Zartan will get away, and
sure.
What's
Dr. Mindbender is going to hang out with his weird outfit.
What are the twins' names again? Momon, Nadon?
Tomax and Zaymot.
Yeah, that's Zaybars and Zagus. They usually get away. But basically, if you have a name, you'll escape. But if you're just one of the faceless Cobra Legion.
Yeah, or a bat. Usually the bats are the ones that all get shot, the robots.
Yeah.
Beep boop.
Thanks. Thanks for bringing us back around with that. So anyway, Storm Shadow breaks them out, which leads us to plot number three, is that Snake Eyes, the real Snake Eyes, is taking commands from his master, played by the RZA, that he has to go catch...
In the most convincing performance of the movie.
That they
RZA
have to go...
channeling his best Mads Mikkelsen impression.
Yeah, Snake Eyes and his... In that he is doing food-based puns. Snake Eyes and his apprentice Jinx, who's a lady, they have to go catch Storm Shadow because Storm Shadow killed everybody's sensei, Hardmaster. Which sounds like
from
he got
the,
his name...
From the cartoon, dude.
He got his
name from a... translated condom wrapper.
Yeah. Applicate Hardmaster, please, on private stick area for best safe.
For best fun times.
For best fun time safety virus.
But yeah.
It was just called a no baby wrapper. Hardmaster, no baby wrapper.
But, this is
a plot that doesn't really line up with the rest of the movie, but somehow I must have missed the scenes where everybody communicates, because without much communication between these three Joes who are on the run and Snake Eyes, they all meet up at the same place and are working on the same plan.
Yeah.
But so Roadblock and Flint and Lady
Probably
J,
Facebook or Twitter or something.
Yeah. They're all following each other on Instagram.
Their plans to each other.
They're all wearing Google Glass and doing a Google Hangout.
What are they, babies? Google Glasses?
Yeah. Google Glasses, which is with the glasses that babies wear so that they can, I guess, see things like an adult sees.
Like in that movie Brain Scan where, oh wait, you know, where he plays a video game and kills people?
Sure.
What does that have to do with babies?
I don't know.
Are you thinking of Jim Henson's Brain Scan babies?
Yep.
Featuring little Eddie Furlong?
But, So
anyway,
the important thing
three,
is like...
The three Joes come back to America and they set up shop in an abandoned gym.
Yeah.
And... They do a little bit of like James Bondy, Mission Impossible type, sending Lady J. Well, that Lady J seduces and then they kidnap an assistant to the president so that they can then sneak Lady J into some kind of fancy ball that the president's at, so they can steal a hair off of his head and check the DNA to make sure he's not a Zartan, which
so
it turns out he is.
What's great is that a warden in a top secret prison can recognize like. All these secret agents on site, but the president can't recognize Lady J.
Who is a Cobra?
Yeah, Zartan. Yeah,
regardless that he's the president and he's met all these Joes, I guess he's Zartan and he's fought them all. But also James Carville is at the event because one, he will do anything for money and appear in anything, and two, he is the most cobra-y looking character in the whole movie.
Yeah, James he looks like a cobra snake.
Much more. James Carville looks like,
put a hoodie on him. He looks like a cobra.
It looks like Globulus used his snake making gas on James Carville, and that's why he's the snake man from Jonah Hex, basically.
Yeah, I think in the credits he was listed as Nemesis Enforcer.
But meanwhile, Snow Baby, or whatever the fuck his name is.
Snow Baby?
I don't know.
I don't know who you're referring to. Storm Shadow?
Storm Shadow.
So Snake Eyes and Jinx go and get Storm Shadow from the mountain ninja refuge that he's healing.
He's been burnt up. Of course, they got to put him in some pagodas on the edge of a mountain to heal him.
And a combination of ancient magics and high technology.
Yes.
Yeah, and they have a big repelling fight.
And it is repellent. They have a fight through the mountains that involves a lot of zip lines and grappling hooks, which sounds great, but the geography of it is... And let's say one thing. So the director of this movie directed a bunch of dance movies.
Yeah, right? he made the two Justin Bieber concert films, and he made Step Up 2 and 3.
And Step Up 3. And the Step Up
movies...
And
a bunch of dance TV shows.
I assume in the Bieber movies and in the Step Up movies... He's really good at capturing choreography dance on film.
Yeah.
So that you know where all the dancers are in relation to each other. You see the moves. He is so bad at doing that with action scenes.
Yeah.
You don't know where anyone is in relationship to anybody else. You don't know what's going on. There's no sense of them being in a physical space. So they're fighting on the side of a mountain, but the whole thing feels like if their rappelling lines got cut, they could just walk up the side of the mountain and walk around. It's like there's no sense that any of the heroes are ever in danger at any point.
And when people's rappelling lines get cut, they kind of float there for a second, look around, hold up a sign.
That says,
fall.
Uh-oh. Yeah. There's that scene where Zartan paints a tunnel on a wall and then runs into it, and then the good guys slam into it afterwards because it's just a tunnel wall.
But meanwhile, we've met Bruce Willis, who's very sleepy.
So Snake Eyes and Jinx catch her Storm Shadow. It turns out he was framed for the murder of Hardmaster by Zartan, who apparently is 85 years old, because he was an old man when these ninjas were kids. But so they all meet up, and they go, we're going to need some help. Let's get the reason we're called G.I. Joe. And it turns out it's this old retired General Joe, played by Bruce Willis. Yeah, in the sleepiest performance since, I guess, the last thing he did.
General I. Joe.
General Ignatius Joe.
And he's just got a bunch of... basically, he's got weapons hidden behind every part of his house. Like, it's just like a montage of, like, I'm opening this cupboard, and there's guns.
And now, if this was the tone of the whole movie...
this other thing, and there's guns.
So here's part of the problem with the movie. The tone is not silly enough to be, like, popcorn fun, and not serious enough to be, like, a Bourne movie, where it's fun, but you believe that there's some kind of... realistic action going on. It's not. It's both not smart and serious enough to be taken seriously as a thriller, and it is not goofy crazy enough to be like a cartoon movie.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't feel comfortable being goofy as I think it wants to be, because they don't want to insult the fans.
Yeah, I guess so. But the one of the few moments that worked for me as a goofy moment is when they reveal that literally everything in Bruce Willis's house, the cupboards, the closets, just... think his kitchen drawers, they all hide guns and knives and other weapons.
Yeah.
And at one point, he opens up a closet door and he pulls out this 10, 11 foot long rack of guns. It's like, how did that fit in that closet? Like, he opens up his garage.
He's got Mary Poppins' bag in there.
He opens up his garage and there's just a tank in it. So it's like
a fucking bag of holding.
And if the and if the tone of the movie was, this is the kind of movie where a guy has guns hidden in every panel of his house, I'd be, because he's a retired soldier who I guess never got out of the covert ops game. Then I'd be like, okay, this is a silly movie. I could deal with that.
But most importantly, he's got General George S. Patton's gun.
Yeah, which is in a velvet lined
box.
It's
like the, there's a one of the Lupin animated movies. There's like an evil tin pot dictator who loves knives. And when Fujiko like breaks into his office, every drawer she pulls open is full of just loose knives.
That's kind of what this was like.
But we're getting to my favorite part of the movie, like
the part where Lady J is in running shorts and she bends over.
No, we've passed that already. That was also a good part of the movie.
The part where Lady J takes off her dress and changes into other clothes.
That was also a good part of the movie. But I was going to say, the goofy thing that I like is when we finally get to know what Jonathan Pryce's plan is, and it is crazy.
So Jonathan Pryce has asked all the nuclear nations in the world to come to Fort Sumter for a nuclear summit. Here's the thing. Even North Korea is invited, and they show up, which is crazy. Israel is invited. Israel has denied having nuclear weapons for decades. Everyone knows they have them, but they never officially announced it. But I guess if there's a summit, I'll just show up, whatever. And
yeah, man, free crab cakes.
They want to see
it. Yeah, because the Jewish state is going to go for the crab cakes, Dan. They're going to go
it's
for
a forbidden pleasure.
Okay, you know what? Throw some bacon on those crab cakes while you're at it.
They're in a different zip code. They don't care. They don't care what's trafe or not.
God totally doesn't notice where you're, all I look at is if you're eating at home. You know, that doesn't matter to me. These commandments, they only apply to one country. Crab cakes. Now I imagine like the Prime Minister of Israel comes over to your house and you're like, can I get you a shrimp cocktail? Perhaps a cheeseburger?
Yep. I've just blended up some milk and some beef in this blender.
I've made you some Hyrax Parmesan, because Hyraxes are also not kosher.
Oh, sure. That's pretty borscht belty in front of the Jewish Prime Minister.
Yeah. Well, just offer him a belt full of borscht, why don't you?
Sure. But the point is that...
So he brings them all there and he says, I want to imagine a world with no nuclear weapons. So everybody, if you don't get rid of all your nuclear weapons, I'm going to launch America's nuclear weapons at you. And they're like, that's crazy. And he goes, okay, and presses the launch button. So all of the nuclear warheads in America
apparently, like,
launch.
His in this movie, the nuclear football isn't just a thing that has the launch codes in it. It's a traveling briefcase that can literally launch all of the weapons from that briefcase just by pushing a button.
And also, we learned that if you launch nuclear weapons, it appears on a big TV screen above you, even if you're from another country. So all the other countries are like, what? We retaliate. They launch
their nuclear...
They all bring out their briefcases and launch their weapons.
They're all labeled in their own languages with like a little label maker.
They label on somebody else's languages?
I know, but it's just like... they aren't really fancy things. They're just like someone like pulled out like one of those grocery label things.
Yeah, well, you can't... If you try to put something on too nice, it might hit the button and you launch the codes.
But I just imagine them putting the launch label on the wrong button.
I would just love the... I'd love to talk to the prop designer who put the effort into like designing each different fucking briefcase for this stupid movie.
What would a Russian briefcase look like compared to a French briefcase? So all the nations in the world that have nuclear weapons launch their nuclear weapons. And Jonathan Pryce says, now the world's going to die unless one of us unilaterally destroys the nuclear weapons. Anyone want to do it? Fine, I'll do it. And he destroys all the American nuclear weapons with one button.
Yeah.
And then, so everybody else destroys theirs too.
They're like, I guess we better follow suit now that this is happening
now,
too.
Hot shrapnel raining down on the planet.
We're going to look like a bunch of goofs if everybody shoots off their missiles against America. So there's just missile parts, and I assume the radioactive cores of the missiles just falling down.
We'll just forget the part where this asshole just launched all his nuclear weapons
at
us.
And Jonathan Pryce goes, welcome to a world without nuclear weapons, even though, like, there's still thousands of nuclear weapons that are just not on the launch pads.
Yeah.
But meanwhile...
Meanwhile, arriving by fanboat...
It's Cobra Commander.
Uh-oh, with ninja...
And his ninja brigades, and nobody seems to bat an eye at this, because I guess the president just rolls with a bunch of ninjas, usually.
They thought they were at a Comic-Con.
Cobra Commander says, now that you don't have any nuclear weapons, we have our weapons, the Zeus Satellite Project. And these satellites... basically just drop big metal tubes.
Yeah, spikes.
And because of gravity, I guess, they strike with more power than a nuclear weapon, but without the radioactive fallout. So they're actually not as bad as nuclear weapons.
Not as scary.
And Tilbert takes a moment to destroy London.
Which is kind of shocking within about
20 seconds, you just see all of London destroyed, and it's like, all right, I guess they just killed millions of people, and G.I.
We're
Joe...
not really talking about that for
and
the rest of the film?
And that's when G.I. Joe strikes.
Yeah.
And...
Well, you gotta wait until one country's exploded.
And as Dan said while we were watching, they couldn't have done it before in time to save London. And
they gotta draw first blood. You don't want
to
go
that,
in.
Yeah, you need to be able to accuse them of something.
Yeah,
when you put them on trial.
I don't even think the British Prime Minister, who I assume is there as a nuclear weapon holding country, cares that much.
Yeah.
That London is. There's no moment.
You would imagine
you'd
be in tears.
Yeah,
my entire family,
everyone I know is dead.
So much history.
God, the Queen. Oh Lord, my whole culture. He's just like, what? Come on, man. So Cobra Commander says, "We'll launch these satellites at everybody." Well, these satellites are already automatically launched. So, but we'll only stop them if you give me total allegiance. The Joes attack. There's a bunch of explosions. It's a really Storm Shadow. It turns out he's with the heroes, which we already knew. So he, again, rather
than... Yeah, why didn't he save London?
The plan involves Storm Shadow getting the president and taking the nuclear suitcase, but he waits until after the nuclear missiles are launched, disarmed, and London is destroyed before he decides to break out his part of the plan.
By these satellites that were shot into space, how?
This all must have happened while Cobra Commander was in his tube. So did he set up this plan ahead of time, or have they been doing it without his supervision? And here's the thing. Zartan is the president.
Zaytoons.
Zatarans.
Look, Zingbat is
Ziggy.
Ziggy. How much better would it be if Ziggy had impersonated the president and he just can't get anything to work for him?
Can't catch a break.
Ziggy, actually, he's just President Ziggy. Forget about impersonating. President Ziggy, you got that peace summit coming up with the Russians? Oh, boy, I don't know.
Vice President Parrot isn't giving me any respect.
Vice President Silent Dog who looks kind of like Ziggy. Yeah. And it would be the leader of the opposition would be that sassy parrot. Like the Republican leader is the sassy parrot.
The complaint office is closed by executive order.
Let's see how they like it.
So
of course, Wallace Shawn plays Ziggy, President Ziggy. So that's the sequel to Ziggy, the movie I pitched 5 years ago.
The sequel's called Ziggy and Chief.
Ziggy and Chief, I could say that. What about Hail to the Zig?
Sure.
It's fuck Ziggy and Chief. It's called Hail to the... No, the tagline is Hail to the Zig.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the trailer. So
Commander in Grief.
Here's the trailer. Commander and Why Me. So here's the trailer. You see news stories of like, terror attack at such and such, Russia invading Crimea, all these problems. And then you just see a shot of the White House and like an aide rushing through the hallway and he slaps a file on the president's desk. Of course, the chair is turned with his back to us. He slaps a file on the desk. Sir, we've got a crisis on our hands. The chair turns.
Bass drop.
It's Ziggy in the chair and he goes, why me? And then cue rap music. And then it's like shots of Ziggy, like, I guess.
It
like
takes two to make a thinker.
Wow, Rob Bass.
I never thought being the president would be so difficult. But there's also like a sexy like Speaker of the House that Ziggy's going to flirt with. And then at the end it says, Hail to the Zig.
Mm-hmm.
Ziggy and Chief, Hail to the Zig. This summer, Hail to the Zig. But anyway, that's a different movie. That's not G.I. Joe Retaliation. The point is, Cobra's plan is crushed almost instantly as soon as these four Joes get into action. Yeah. And these four Joes, again, are The Rock, Lady J, this guy Flint, who has no charisma or personality, and old Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And Snake Eyes. Who walks down a flight of stairs just firing Uzis.
Just firing Uzis in the air. I guess probably killing some presidential aides.
A couple of the leaders of those other nations.
And I love, my favorite moment, also this, and Lady
Actually, that's bullshit. He can shoot shuriken out of the air. He won't shoot anybody
else.
Uzis doesn't
that fire shurikens, probably.
Probably.
It's like that Ninja Turtles pizza shooter gun. That shot those plastic discs.
What a delicious way to die.
I used a pizza bullet. That way there's no evidence. They just think
the victim devoured his own means
of death.
They just
think he ate some pizza.
And his kidney.
they thought he ate pizza in the head. So
that's the only way he eats pizza.
Hold on, let me figure this out. Policeman picks up pizza slice, spits into mouth. Yep, this is how we do it, all right. So,
sure, it was in his forehead. Yeah, it migrated, I don't know.
But the best part of this plan is that Cobra Commander is so cocky that he has the Cobra flag pulled up the flagpole at the White House, and two big Cobra banners are dropped.
They're
the
just
top.
Waiting for the sign.
And it's like, one, when did they print those banners up?
Joanne Fabrics must have been slammed that day when they bought all that stuff.
I need them by next Tuesday. I don't know, 40-foot banners with this terrorist insignia on it. I don't know if we should do it. I'll pay you extra, just rush the order. We got a lot of print jobs. please, I have a plan. This is very important. And so, and what's great is that Cobra's not even at the White Cobra Commander's not at the White House when they do this. So I guess he's just imagining what it's going to look like. And then, since the Joes defeat them almost instantly, I guess the Cobra operatives at the White House just give up and take the banners down.
We got to hold on to this.
No. We were on your side the whole time.
We did this as a gag.
We're double agents, just like Snow Baby.
That's why we didn't Snow Baby. Snow Baby would be such a great name for a character. So anyway, the Joes win. They kill everybody in a long action sequence that is not choreographed very well. Surprise, surprise.
There's this great scene of The Rock driving something around.
The Rock drives around this
driving
tank.
Like a tank dune buggy.
that fires missiles, but not before he gets in a fan boat chase with Firefly. Because, of course, you got to be in a fan boat. Yeah. Why not?
Because he's a Cajun, I guess.
And he manages to get the Cobra briefcase and hit the abort button in time to stop the satellites from destroying other cities. But the abort button also blows up all the satellites, which seems like a weird feature to build into your death weapon.
Yep. And then the satellites rain down on the planet.
Mm-hmm. And Cobra Commander escapes in a helicopter, never to be seen again. You know what? I bet there was an after credits sequence, and we just didn't even wait
for
it.
Yeah, we didn't bother.
That probably a Cobra Commander, like, meeting with Nick Fury or something like that.
Yeah, sure. Or a scene of Bruce Willis's wife finding all these guns on accident.
You know what it was?
Honey?
I bet it was you go through the wreckage of the base, and you go to the tube that Destro's in, and, like, Destro opens his eyes and then smiles.
There's so many options. We're going to have to watch this when we
get gotta watch the whole movie over again.
It's on Netflix, guys.
No, we got to watch the whole movie over again to see it in context. So the president has been saved. The Joes have been cleared. They all get medals. And Snake Eyes is still in his ninja full body with helmet outfit, and he's getting a medal, which is weird. And it's just weird that Snake Eyes is like a well-known guy and who just walks around in his full armor.
That was a cool dude, Snake Eyes. I know that guy.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
He's a well-known member of the Arashikage Ninja Squad.
This famous
or whatever.
Ninja Squad led by, anyway, but it doesn't matter. Bruce Willis has one of George Patton's pistols. He gives it to Dwayne The Rock Johnson, says, for when you catch up with Cobra Commander, because I guess Cobra Commander killed Patton. I don't know why. Somehow that's revenge for something.
Yeah, I guess he's giving him the license to kill.
This is my second favorite moment in the movie. The last shot of the movie, literally, is Dwayne The Rock Johnson, after just having a medal pinned on him by Bruce Willis in the presence of the president, and this is appearing live on television, just points the Patton pistol at the sky and fires. And it's like, one...
This isn't 4th of July.
This is, one, so Bruce Willis was just carrying around a loaded gun in a velvet-lined case all this time. And usually historical memorabilia guns are not loaded, but...
I thought he pulled the ammunition out of the box.
Oh, did he? I missed that then. If that's the case, he still... he just fired a loaded weapon. I'll allow it then. He fired a loaded weapon just in the presence of the president, which is kind of against the rules, I'm guessing.
Yeah. So, but...
End of movie, ready for G.I. Joe 3D.
Yeah, rockin' metal tune.
Probably
no,
a couple
it goes
of
straight
after credits.
To How You Like Me Now.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the most bland credits music you could think of.
And
yeah.
The credits are just showing us scenes from the movie.
Scenes from a mall. Scenes from
a
marriage.
For some reason, it's a montage of scenes from a mall with the, what was it, Woody Allen and Bette Midler?
Yep.
And mine. And then scenes from a marriage with Liv Ullmann. Yeah, is it Liv Ullmann in Scenes from a Marriage?
Yes, I think so. So let's go directly to Final Judgments. Was this a good bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked? Elliot, what do you have to say about this?
It's just such a bland, kind of dull movie. I wanted it to be a good bad movie, and there are moments when it was like, oh, here's the good bad movie it could have been, but it wasn't even like didn't even reach the level of bad movie. It's just kind of like there, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like trying to judge like. A piece of wood you see in the street, like I guess it's there. I can't deny it exists.
You can't say that's a good bad piece of wood.
No, I'm seeing it.
I mean, as pieces of wood go, it's fine.
It's just there. I know it's. I mean, there's no way to. It's just lying there doing nothing.
Yeah.
Seeing as I watched a little bit of Tango and Cash on TV today, which really showed me what a good bad movie could be. This didn't, you know.
Yeah, I thought that mostly it was a bad movie. The good bad sequence in it, as I said, like that I liked the most was when Jonathan Pryce had his plan, which was just counting on the fact that if he unleashed a bunch of nukes, everyone else would follow suit. And then if he disarmed the nukes, everyone else would follow suit.
Even
and then
North
there
Korea.
Were no more nukes in the world after that.
There's this great moment where everyone's disarmed their nukes.
He's a student of human beings.
Yeah. Zartan must know people in order to become them. There's everyone's destroyed their nukes except North Korea, and they're like, North Korea, and the North Korean guy's like, okay, and turns them off. And it's like this weird peer pressure moment. If you could accurately encapsulate this movie by the Cobra banners being unveiled at the White House, then it would have been a good bad movie, or even a movie I kind of liked, but it's not. Stuart.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are all agreeing it's a bad movie, and I feel like when I saw the trailers, I thought maybe this could be either a movie I kind of liked or maybe even a good bad movie, but it feels like the entire movie was just cut to be trailers. Everything's so rapidly cut. It's just, it's so bland.
Yeah, it feels like they built the trailer first and then they built the movie out of trailer parts.
Yeah.
So we have a sponsor again this week. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/flophouse and enter offer code flophouse at checkout.
Ironically, Squarespace, not a space for squares.
No.
It's for cool people.
It's for cool dudes like you.
Don't pander.
All right.
Don't let me say that.
We've said before, look, if you're living in this modern world and you don't have a website.
Tom Tomorrow's Comics.
What's going on? What's happening? You need a website.
It's the 21st century.
You need a website, dummy.
Start your website. I don't care what it is. Maybe it's part of the, Morgan Fairchild fan ring. Just put it up. Put up your website.
Yeah, what are you waiting for? Even the guy who started put up your website for you?
The guy who started aquafan.com got a website.
Yeah, come on.
Squarespace makes it easy with beautiful designs, with drag and drop content, with 24/7 support via live chat and email.
Dragons?
Plans start at a mere $8 a month, including a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Usually you got to buy those things separately, hosting and domain. And it also has responsive design. That means that if you're looking at on a mobile device like a phone or a tablet, it will reconfigure for you. So why don't you start a trial with no credit card required and build your website today? Go to, again, squarespace.com/flophouse and enter flophouse to get 10% off your first purchase and to show your support for us, the flophouse.
And you know what else you don't know what to do with your website that you're getting from Squarespace? Make it a Flophouse fan site.
Yeah, why not? Come on, guys.
There aren't enough of those out there, right?
Pump up the jams.
Not yet. They'll never
pump
be
pump up the jams, as Dan said.
Don't know
straight
how to
from the ad copy.
Yeah. Make sure you say pump up the jams in the ad. They'll understand. Pump up the jams. Anyway, Stuart, I believe you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, I know you guys are trying to put on a brave face, but
yes, we are.
We got to let everybody know that the Flophouse is in trouble. You know,
we are
coming up on our busy season, the summertime. I don't know if you guys have been reading the paper, but local land developer Reginald Bucksworth.
No, that yes. asshole.
Yeah, that
Pardon
asshole.
My language. I just, you know.
Brooklyn land developer Reginald Bucksworth,
you know,
is planning
like
on demolishing the Flophouse
no.
to make way for some fucking condos or something.
You know, but that's where the kids hang out.
And you know what I don't like about that Reginald Bucksworth guy? His snootiness.
He's the
so
snootiest
snooty.
Guy. And, you know,
always wearing his white suit and driving around in the back of his Lincoln Town car.
We tried to do some bikinis optional Jeep tours around Brooklyn, but it was just so expensive.
Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's weird to do a Jeep tour around Brooklyn.
Exactly. It's too slow. And when we said bikinis optional, too many people just chose not to wear a bikini and wore their normal clothes.
Yeah,
and that was kind of a bummer.
And the breakdance competition we thought would save it. We forgot and put Dan No Knees McCoy in as our contestant.
And I broke my dance. Oh, boy.
You, the listeners, can actually help us save the Flophouse, hashtag save the Flophouse, by contributing.
This guy
you need to go
it.
To estoymerchandise.com and buy a t-shirt. that says the flop ass on it, has our faces, to show your support and show that you're standing up against snooty ass wipes like Reginald Buxworth.
The third.
They're $25 and it'll make you look like you are a courageous, brave G.I. Joe style human being.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's quite a lot of pressure to put on a t-shirt, but these t-shirts can hold up to it.
But now that the business has been taken care of.
And business is good.
We can, okay, move on to
bad business.
A little interactive segment with you, the listener, that we call the Flophouse so makes love to you.
Sit around while you try and call in, I guess.
We're outside your home. Unlock your door. We're coming in. No, this is letters from listeners.
Oh, the letters segment. Phew. What a relief. Oh, it God. Was only the letters, not Dan sexually harassing the listeners. Listeners write in, reprimand Dan. Dan can't do that. It's not okay. No means no, Dan. No means no. Even if that no is written in a letter from a listener harassed by Dan. Letters is brought to you by Dan's restraining order.
Thank you, Elliot.
If you see Dan, report him to a cop.
This first letter, thank you for that Foley, that James Foley. This is
it's James Foley. That's not even a kid in the hall.
This is titled Spooktacular Flophouse Dream.
A lot of Flophouse
I like the pronunciation of that.
Dear Dan and dudes. I kind of had a
I've
dream.
I've been upgraded to dude.
I kind of had a dream that featured you guys last night. Creepy, right? The original Peaches, the house cat, and I had to spend a night in Dracula's house for $1 million.
Wait, so not Dracula's castle, his house?
Well, literally.
So was it like a bungalow?
Literally, his next sentence. It wasn't a castle. It was a house. Pretty
it's
nice,
like a
though.
Ranch style?
Yeah, it was an open floor ranch house, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright style.
Dracula woke up and he was pretty angry.
Wait, so we were spending the night, but Dracula didn't know we were there?
I asked him what he dreamt about and he replied, sounding a lot like Elliot, poison, as always. A spectacular melee ensued. How do you defeat Dracula? You put him in a sleeping bag and beat the shit out of him. Thanks for the laughs and
Wolverine
the spookily good bad dream. That's Auntie, last name withheld, from Finland.
Well, thank you for listening and for dreaming about us, I guess, and having the single wussiest Dracula, I think, ever in history in your dream. So I like to think this is a retired Dracula living in, like,
yeah,
Taos
exactly.
or something.
Yeah, this is like the gay bat Dracula who's just...
Oh, gay bat Dracula.
Yeah.
From Food Fight. At least said gay bad Dracula, and I don't know what that means.
From Dracula.
That's Frankenstein insulting Dracula.
Yeah. You mean Frankenstein's
gay,
monster.
Dr. Frankenstein
would run in fear from Dracula. Unless it's like Frankenstein is sitting there and he can insult Dracula because his monster's right behind him. Like a,
do you just call him Doc Frankenstein? Like you're like his...
Maybe.
Like
I don't
his know, intern
Brown.
Or something?
Well, we'll check the tape later. But like, it's like a My Bodyguard type situation.
Yeah. And his and Igor's like, Dr. Frankenstein, come on. Calling someone gay is an insult? That's no good.
That's offensive.
Yeah.
Next, you're going to make fun of my hump.
Yeah.
Let's wrap. Mummy, can you talk about how Dr. Frankenstein has offended you today?
And the mummy says nothing.
No,
the mummy does not talk.
Only the voice of ages coming from his sandy
mouth. He opens his mouth
like
and just a bunch of scarabs fly out.
So I hope that answers your question that you didn't ask.
What a mummy sounds like.
So this next letter is titled, Everyone Needs a Second Chance. Dear Leonardo, Michelangelo, and Donatello, you know who is who.
We do, yeah.
I'm 34 years old. And I've been a loyal listener to the Flophouse for over 20 years.
Your loyalty will be rewarded.
I've never
in
had
the afterlife.
I've never had the courage to send in a question, but fortune favors the seized day, so here goes. Is there a movie that you disliked on first viewing, but it had just enough to warrant a second viewing, and you subsequently came away from that viewing actually liking the movie? In my case, it was The Hobbit. I hated it the first time, but upon seeing it a second time, I enjoyed it. 15-minute singing and dishwashing sequence included. Sincerely, Jesse, last name withheld.
I'll speak real quickly about The Hobbit, because I actually like it. I feel like that's a movie that definitely rewards seeing at home when you can just sit down and take pee breaks and whatnot. I feel like when all those movies, people seem to complain a lot about the length, but I feel like when all three of them are out, or people can watch all three of them at home. People will just binge watch them like a fucking TV show and won't complain about how long they are anymore. To actually answer your question, I kind of felt that way about Scott Pilgrim. The first time I saw it, I didn't really like it. And, but second viewing, I liked it a lot.
I would say, the thing that came to mind when reading this is a movie that I actually liked the first time, but didn't love. And that was, Miller's Crossing. The first time I saw it, you know, I kind of, it was enjoyable, but it felt very surfacey to me. And I, of course, didn't follow the plot because it's notoriously intricate. But the second time, when I kind of knew all the ins and outs of it, I could focus on the levels of emotion that actually do exist in that movie, but aren't necessarily like right on the surface. And now it's actually one of my most highly rated Coen Brothers movies.
Hmm.
What do you?
It's hard for me to think of one, but this is not quite the same. But I think I would say probably Dirty Dancing, because when I watched it when I was younger, I did not like it. But it was a big favorite of my wife's when she was growing up, and she really likes it.
And you're watching it through her eyes now.
Exactly. Like, seeing it through her eyes, I can see things in it that I didn't see before that are enjoyable. And there are things about it that, like, the, like, 60s Jewish Borscht Belt, like, Adirondacks resort locale, which I didn't know anything about when I was growing up, knowing some of that history, like, I appreciate the movie a little bit more.
You like it because you like history.
Well, no, but it's a setting that, like, where I can see, like, oh, that I can I understand totally what the setting they were recreating and, like, what a good portrait it is of that type of place. Whereas when I was a kid, I was like, I don't know what they're doing or where they're going. So
I don't like dancing, let alone dirty dancing.
The cleaner, the better, please.
Well, I have to say, like, I'm not a particular fan of Dirty Dancing, but having last summer gone to your house and watched it in your backyard projected on a sheet for your wife's birthday, I really enjoyed it. In that context, also seeing it, I guess, through your wife's eyes.
Yeah. I mean, it helped me get over the fact that I hate that I Had the Time of My Life song,
mm-hmm.
which also is forever associated in my mind with Chuck E. Cheese.
had the time of your life at Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah,
when I was a kid, we would have birthdays at Chuck E. Cheese, and it seemed they always played that song, because I guess Dirty Dancing had just come out. But
yeah.
Anyway.
This next letter is titled The Deep Sigh Cause. Or should I say, Dear Smelliot Killen, Buart Skellington, and Dan Macabre.
Why is my scary name Smelliot? I don't know. Like, unless it's the smell of a rotting corpse. I don't understand why.
This letter was written during Shocktober. Sorry, Dan, I couldn't remember your Shocktober moniker, so I made one up. I've noticed you often criticize a movie by saying it suffered from bad screenwriting rather than bad directing, and vice versa. How do you make such a distinction? Is it based solely on poor dialogue, or are there other indicators? Since this question is mostly aimed at Elliot,
woo!
I've prepared additional questions for Dan and Stuart to answer as well. Stuart, what is the Flophouse house cat's party drug cocktail of choice? Or is the house cat teetotaling Popeye's addict like Elliot? Dan, if you could eat any fake food from a movie or television show, what would you choose? Examples include Slurm from Futurama, Krabby Patties from SpongeBob SquarePants.
SpongeBob. SpongeBob's mom. SpongeBob's.
Or dehydrated.
Short for Sponge Barbara.
Or dehydrated Pizza Hut from Back to the Future Part 2. Thanks. Keep up the good flopping. Sincerely, Kate, last name withheld. P.S. I just wanted to mention that I, like Dan, suffer from a deep sigh affliction. For years, my parents, bosses, friends, and teachers have thought I was expressing exasperation when I was actually just breathing. I'm glad that us deep sighers finally have Dan to bring awareness of a necessary deep sighing to the world. So I guess you are entirely responsible for the substance of this letter, and we.
So it's kind
of
how do you tell when it's bad writing or bad directing?
Yeah,
I think it's not so much dialogue is maybe a part of it, but like storytelling structure and how the plot moves or fits together or how the characters are developed is more seems like more of a writing thing. The director affects that. But that's more the underlying script, whereas, like, the style of a movie, like, you can have a movie that makes no sense, the characters are really thin, but the style is really cool, and that's the good direction, bad script. Or you could have a movie that's really blandly shot, maybe the performances are not so strong, it's not paced quite right, but there's...
Give me an example.
Off the top of my head, it's harder to think of a movie that's well-written and poorly directed, because those tend to just come out bad anyway.
Yeah.
Like a bad, it's an old saying that I am not taking credit for, that a good director can save a bad script, but a good writer cannot save a bad director. Mm. That like the director has the final imprint and you're watching it. It's a visual movie. So a really stylish and well shot movie, or well edited or excitingly paced movie that has a crappy script, can still be enjoyable, but it's rare for, but a director can really sink a good script.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of these scripts that are on the blacklist or whatever.
Yeah.
That end up being made into movies and end up
and
being
come out
shitty,
terrible. Yeah,
like Suspect Zero, was that the movie?
I don't know, but like The Beaver was one that was on one of those. Like a lot of those blacklist scripts, maybe there's something in the script that just doesn't come through, that is mangled in translation to the screen. But but sometimes there's like a really well written scene in an otherwise not particularly interesting movie, and I like to think that that's this a little bit of a better screenplay coming through. But hard for me to come up with an example off the top of my head.
Okay. To answer your question, the house cat is a big beer guy. He drinks a lot of beer, and that's going to catch up with him later in life when his...
maybe a Silver Bullet fan like yourself?
He likes cheap beer. For a while, he drank a lot of Four Loko when he was a pitch man for that product.
That short lives.
Yeah, and
go into bars and start parties.
Yeah, he likes his Jägerbombs. I was trying to speak in the parlance of the time. Yeah, and if he's at a nice dinner or a dinner party, he usually drinks like an oyster stout because the seafood. He's a cat, you know.
And if I was going to eat any
Soylent Green,
that's what I was going to say. Oh,
if you could have any movie food, you'd have processed human corpses.
Yeah, I mean,
you'd have imaginary dessert from Hook.
Yeah, hold on. Hold on, maybe I would have that lickable wallpaper from the Willy Wonka.
Wonka, that's a pretty safe one.
It's you wouldn't, because I imagine you were going to say the sushi that was on the nude woman in Rising Sun.
It's not an imaginary food. That's a food that exists.
I have trouble believing that actually exists.
So last letter, it goes like
sorry
this.
Sorry that I took your...
No, it's fine.
I said it as a joke. Not thinking you were going to reveal you had a cannibal inside you.
No, I mean, the whole bit was going to be that I didn't know what Soylent Green was.
Oh, I ruined your bit.
Oh, okay.
That's good. That would have taken time. Anyway, keep moving.
So the next letter and last letter goes like this. Hey, Floppers. I've been
final
going through your
letter.
Back catalog.
Finish it.
Most impressive.
And I had a couple of thoughts.
Flawless letter reading.
Number one, you know your multi-episode guest host and Elliot replacer, Brock something? Brock Handlebar, maybe?
Yeah, Brock Mahan, not Brock Handlebar.
When I first heard him on an old episode, I was certain that Mr. Handlebar was actually Elliot doing a voice. I figured that Elliot had picked the obviously fake name Brock so he could do some sort of bit where he finally
Brock
got
Man
to act
Handler.
All manly. But as the episode went on, Brock didn't do anything particularly manly.
Whoa!
I thought he might threaten to lift you up by your undies, Dan, or at least challenge Stuart to arm wrestling. Maybe he'd talk about eating beef burgers, but nothing.
Brock is actually a vegetarian, too. That's a weird thing.
Why did Elliot pick Brock Handlebar if he wasn't going to use the opportunity to talk about doing wheelies and to steal Dan's computer? Lame. I realized, though, when Brock returned, that he probably isn't a character. But then they made a movie about the clumps, so even baffling characters can get sequels.
What?
Anywho, the takeaways are, A, tell Brock, character man, that he's a walking missed opportunity, but that he can fix that still. And B, Elliot, I think you could sound like Brock if you wanted to. You should stick with classic Elliot, though. Number two.
Thanks.
Apparently Stewart sounding like Seth Rogen is a thing. I don't see it. What I have seen from the first episode I listened to is that...
We've established with the Brock Elliot comparison, this person's ears do not work properly. Letter writer, I apologize. Get your ears checked out.
That's fair.
You may have used a Q-tip a little too far in.
From the first episode I listened to is that Dan sounds like Martin Starr. What a coincidence. I think that you should push the idea that Elliot also sounds
it's not
like
a compliment necessarily.
Elliot also sounds like a Freaks and Geeks cast member. Then you guys could role play for classic episodes or make up your own. The obvious choice for Elliot is Franco. I don't think
James
that's
Franco.
James Franco.
But if he's not comfortable with that, Sam Levine could work too. Sam Levine is obvious.
Yeah, that's an obvious one.
I don't understand
one.
How.
Like 100%.
This person. 100%.
This lovely person who wrote a letter and took the time to write us.
More
signed
wrong
Marlon
everything.
Matlin.
The Mr. Magoo of listening.
Anyway, John, last name withheld. P.S. Dan, you can read this part silently in your head. You're my favorite flopper. P.P.S. Dan, since I know that if you read this letter at all, you will have read that last postscript out loud.
Yeah.
My actual favorite flopper is when Elliot and Stuart team up to make fun of you. To mix cartoon metaphors, it's like a two-person Voltron teasing Leonardo.
Sure, it's like two kids, one on the other shoulders, wearing a trench coat, trying to sneak into an adult's party.
Yeah, yeah. But the party
always
is,
works.
It's Dan's party, and we're just sneaking in to make fun of him.
Yeah, but we we feel very sorry for your ear problems.
Yeah, get that checked out.
There are, you should probably stop listening to this podcast. The earbuds that you have in your ears are probably...
Whoa, don't be hasty.
Come on.
Don't be hasty, little hobbit.
But maybe use different headphones. Just imagine this person walking down the street and a dog barks at them. Like, that duck of yours, it seems a little strange. What? It said quack, quack, clearly.
But thanks you
for
all.
Hey, buddy, watch out. Thanks for taking the Mr. falling piano.
And running with it.
Thank you.
There's a flying grandma. I don't think so. Piano crushes him.
All of you for writing in. But now is the last segment of the show.
What's about that? Time, I say.
The least popular segment. Recommendations of movies that we actually liked.
It's the part where people turn off the podcast.
Stuart, what's a movie you would like to recommend?
I'm going to recommend the first Brian De Palma movie I ever saw.
It's called Snake Eyes.
It's called...
Raising
Cain. I was going to recommend Raising Cain. Partly, I don't think it's actually really that great, nor does it really fit that well into the De Palma
canon. It's fun, though.
But it's fun, and I think... And John Lithgow plays a... I mean, this is not a secret at all, but John Lithgow plays a guy with multiple personalities. And I like seeing John Lithgow get to not just crazy, but also kind of scary.
Yeah,
like
it's a very underused thing that John Lithgow can do is be scary.
And I think the movie has a number of sequences that are genuinely creepy and tense and scary. So if you like a Brian De Palma thriller that's a little bit lower in his catalog, and you like John Lithgow, I'd recommend giving it a chance.
That was the movie, I think, where a guy saw it and he said, I got to create a serial killer show, do like two okay seasons, then one really bad season with Jimmy Smits, and then do a season with that guy as a serial killer, because he is creepy.
Yeah. So I've seen actually...
In that show, Game of Thrones.
Not even the same channel.
The Red Viper himself, Jimmy Smits.
Yep, Senator Bail Organa, the Red Viper.
Talk about missed opportunities.
I've seen a few movies recently that I...
Oh, God, give us your life story. I
enjoyed.
You've been flying around? Flying a lot?
No.
He's been doing a lot of flight simulators while he watches movies.
Honestly, it's been that my wife has been out of town a fair amount, so I've had more time to just waste on movies. But I watched Hellbaby. I enjoyed that. It's a very sloppy
movie.
The prequel
to Hellboy.
It's a very, very sloppy comedy.
It's the one with the poster with a chick's cleavage, right?
I don't know about that, but it just feels like a bunch of like sketch comedies strung together.
You're thinking
together.
Of Boobs the movie.
Excellent.
I'm up for that. Hard Bodies, right?
But it's a Tom Lynn and Robert Ben Grant movie, but not in their Night at the Museum mode, in their more like crazy, like zany, low budget, scrappy mode. And they both play, two different Father Guido Sarducci's, and it's about Rob Corddry and
Father
Leslie
Guido
Bibb,
Sarducci's
moving into a home,
good stuff.
And Leslie Bibb has a devil baby inside her, and Keegan-Michael Key is very funny in it. He's probably the funniest part. Not a great movie, but fun. I also saw the new Godzilla. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. But the movie I will recommend is a movie that needs no recommendation.
So you're not recommending the other two movies?
No.
So why did
like
why
you,
were they mentioned?
Like you have never done this before.
But I say I'm going to recommend two movies. I don't go, let me go through the other movies
No, I said that I like those movies.
Before I get to the recommendation, let me go through the runners.
The thing is, he's giving you a taste, and then he's giving you a full meal.
Yeah.
Why are you complaining?
These are other movies you can see.
Hellbaby was in a moose boosh.
Yeah, man.
In a moose baby.
It's like we were watching Hannibal, man. So
kind of, but we're watching four episodes when we thought we were only getting one episode.
Exactly. It's supersized episode.
Yeah, it's supersized
during
that it's 4 hours long.
It was during that NBC period where they supersized episodes of Hannibal.
And you're like, it's only 39 cents. I might as well watch it.
Well, there's kind of story here for 5 minutes more of Hannibal, but then they stretch it out with kind of unrelated gag scenes.
Hannibal gets caught in an elevator with a monkey. It's weird.
It seemed like a regular Hannibal's plot.
No, what
Well, nope. Okay, he's eating the monkey. All right. Maybe it is.
So the movie that I want to recommend is a movie that we've discussed here before and probably needs no recommendation for our fans, but I rewatched Videodrome. And the Dissolve did a lot of pieces on that recently that were all worth
good stuff
reading.
Mm-hmm. Good
sight. It's a movie that's very prescient in a lot of ways, but what I actually
it totally predicted the trend of growing guns out of your hand and shoving videotapes in your belly.
No, but I mean, like, there's a lot of talk about how it predicted like growing fascination.
It's a Rob Layfield character, right?
Growing fascination with
his
like,
name's Blood Video.
living your life through screens with like the internet. But for me, what was interesting watching it was actually not looking forward, but looking like at the sort of like nostalgia to the period it was made and the way it was when I was growing up, and like sort of cable was new, and on like the upper limits of the cable dial, you would find weird things that were on there just because like people needed to fill airtime, and sometimes in the middle of the night you would see something inexplicable
that would shock or frighten you or disgust you. Yeah.
During a time that, like, you know, like now on the internet, like you were moments away from something shocking and frightening and disgusting at any time. Like the weirdest stuff,
especially where we were,
is all there. But at the time, it was just like the strange seediness of being able to stumble upon that is something that Videodrome captures beautifully. And that's what I kind of found most charming watching it again recently.
There's something comforting about the way that you can find terrible things on the internet, but like you feel so connected. Whereas back in the day, if you found like some fucked up weird VHS tape that somebody's like, you should watch this weird black and white thing I have, you feel super alone and you can't turn to anyone.
And you also may never find out what it is. Yeah. Like, there are plenty of times when
you'd
see something on cable young and you'd never find out what it was.
Like,
and
what was that half-remembered thing?
An image. Like, it took me a long time to identify having seen a little bit of the Julie Taymor movie Fool's Fire on PBS. And it's this creepy puppet movie.
Oh, right. That's the adaptation of
Hop Frog, I think. Yeah. And it's like, not know. And for years, just didn't know what it was and just had the images from it in my head. And that one, eventually I found out what it was thanks to the internet. But like, there are things you could just stumble on something and see it and it'd be weirded out and be like, what? There wasn't even like a TV Guide channel. The TV Guide only covered some channels and not all of them. You know, like, you just end up not knowing what the hell you saw, you know? It's kind of like how there are those little clips of public access shows and being there. And you're like, well, never going to find out what that was. This guy doing just yelling martial arts chants, you know?
That's why I like, I remember loving that show, Night Flight, which was just like a bunch of like weird, like public domain, like clips and old, like Private Snafu cartoons and stuff like that, where it's just like, okay, well, this was basically the internet at that time, except for you weren't overloaded with that shit. So like, if something was weird, it carried that much more impact because you're like, what the hell is this? I have no context to put this in.
Was it my turn or do you have 8 more movies?
No, that's it.
Anyway, Videodrome's a good movie.
You'll wait until you're done.
you're like angry, and then you're like, but I have to admit, Videodrome.
No, it's a great movie. I didn't know you needed a preamble, but you know. So I watched about 5 movies recently, and first I'll talk about the ones I didn't like.
Oh boy! I mean, you always recommend 3 movies.
I'm going to recommend 1 movie this time. I'm going to recommend a spaghetti western from 1969 in the United States. I think it was earlier in Italy. With Lee Van Cleef, called Death Rides a Horse. May have seen it. It's one that I knew the music from for a long time, but had not actually seen. You'll recognize the main theme if you watch it from Kill Bill, because it's used in that. But this guy is... It opens with the kind of scene I don't like, which is women being assaulted by bandits. But that is the origin story of this kid who sees his family killed and attacked by bandits. But each one of them...
Like Silent Night, Deadly Night?
Kind of. Except each one of them has either an earring or a necklace that's very identifiable. One has a tattoo on his chest, and he remembers them, and he grows up to be a great gunfighter, and he's going to track down each of these men and kill them. At the same time, Lee Van Cleef, who is a bandit who was betrayed by his gang, is out for revenge, and it seems the two of them want revenge on the same men. So they're both hunting the same people, but also in conflict with each other because both want to be the ones who take out these guys. And it's one of those spaghetti westerns where they gain a grudging respect for each other and like take turns basically leaving the other one in the desert to fend for himself. And it ends with a really big action scene at the end. There's a lot of good smaller action scenes. Lee Van Cleef is totally awesome in it. And it's got a great Ennio Morricone score, so you can't go wrong with it. Death Rides a Horse.
Playing at?
Wherever you decide to rent it.
Wherever you decide to rent it.
Rated probably like,
PG? I don't know. they have ratings back
general
then?
Audiences?
So we watched one of the most nothing movies we've ever watched, and I think this is probably the longest we've ever gone.
By far. Wow. Mm,
body slam.
I guess you can just
apologies, audience.
Go Joe, I guess.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe, that is.
Hopefully you've already stopped, moved on with your life.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you got through the giraffe intelligence Joe bit that we at the very beginning of the episode.
You decided if to you throw did. Away your podcasting equipment, your podcast listening equipment, and hug your child. Instead, live your life, man. Go out there. Go and fall in love.
Why are we making this episode longer?
I'm sorry.
We've been...
The Flophouse.
And playing at...
Here.
But not...
There.
Starring...
Me, Dan McCoy.
And me...
Stuart Wellington.
And you...
Elliot Kalin.
Good night.
Everybody. Dan McCoy's robots. They're sexy robots with butts.
So like this vodka robot,
yeah,
pretty
basically.
Much?
Yep.
Yeah.
And all the robots are somebody's wife, so it's extra sexy.
All the robots in that like art book that I remember from the 80s that was always in like...
What, your Soriyama art book?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
well,
about.
Like that Aerosmith cover. There's that one painter who does just sexy robots.
Yeah.
They really love robots.
His name is Boris Vallejo.
No, it's not. Boris Vallejo does fantasy paintings.
My fantasy.
You're saying that those sexy robots aren't a fantasy?
I'm saying he does strapping muscular men wearing tiny underpants with swords in their hands.
With an accentuated clinging to their...
Exactly. Or sexy ladies fighting dragons, much like the art of his wife, Julie Bell. Hmm.
Accentuated pubises.
Isn't that the name of your band? Yeah. Mr. Wellington, no, the accentuated pubises.
This is sensual pubises.